So I want to invite those of you in the cheap seats to move forward if you'd like. There's room in the aisle around the corner. If you'd like to do so, please do. Fine to come around the corner. Yeah. So case two from the transmission of the lamp. The second ancestor, Ananda Arya. Ananda asked Mahakashapa, "The world-honored one gave you the kesa of gold cloth. Did he give you anything else?" Kashapa said, "Ananda." Ananda said, "Yes, master." Kashapa said, "Knock down the flagpole at the gate." In Kazan's poem, the wisteria has withered. The trees have fallen down. Mountains have crumbled level with the plains. Flooding cascades have overflowed their banks. Fire flashes forth from the flint of boulders. And Mumon's verse from the Wumenguan. The call is good, the answer is intimate. How many discuss this with glaring eyes? Elder brother calls, younger brother answers, the family disgrace. There is a spring that does not belong to the yin and the yang. So things are going so well on retreat that we've decided to extend it for 5 more days. And 5 more days will happen today. Someone said to me some comment about this being a short retreat, and I suggested that he hold his breath for the rest of retreat and tell me how short it is. So we say short, we say long, and we think we know what we are talking about. But of course, as we walk this path toward the heart, walk into the source world, the great Dharmakaya, we find that what we thought and the map that we had, that we have believed in and that has been quite helpful, the map of who we think we are, the story of our life, we find that this map does actually does not correspond to our experience. And our tendency is to ignore our experience. Hey, I've got a good map. Why do I need to pay attention? And we are practicing. We are practicing paying attention. The lovely first line of Menju, face-to-face transmission, This is a splendid opportunity for Buddha Dharma to enter into mud and water. So, this is it. And we look away without even knowing we have looked away. So we come back. We come back again and again. We notice all of the stories. And we notice how gripping, how compelling they are. And then sometimes we can notice that, the same old story, but not quite as compelling. what we are practicing is not an act of willpower. Of course, it takes intention and effort, but ultimately, if you think you are doing your practice and you just need to try a little harder, well, go ahead and try. See what happens. Try really, really hard. See what happens. Because something else is going on here. This call and response, the transmission of all things. One wonderful writer and thinker, Brian Swim, said that gravity is the love of each thing in the universe for each other thing. And we exist in this web of love. Each one of us so often imagining that we are separate. And this imagining we are separate is not the problem to be eradicated. Okay, I'm not separate. Not the way forward. This is a splendid opportunity. This transmission that has been passed on is actually no transmission. It is the transmission moment to moment. We might say it is indeed something so special, but it is unlimited. Dharma gates are boundless. If you're hoping for a special moment, you are in luck. Because this is the special moment you have been waiting for. All the conditions are exactly as they need to be. But we have forgotten. But we can't believe it. And indeed, it is important on our path not to take someone else's word for it. This is the path of uncovering the true way that cannot be spoken of. This true way has nothing to do with someone else's approval. But this true way is about recognizing, about tasting water, drinking a cup of water and knowing for yourself whether it's hot or cold. This territory of receiving the sound of the traffic, receiving the many thoughts that course through the mind, the feelings that come and go, the opinions that arise. Each thing is offering itself to you. So to stay, to return again and again, to slow down enough to see what has been here all along. It was so obvious. It has never been lacking. It has never been missing. this great abundance, this special transmission. So this is the offering, this is the call. This is the call that arises from within you. It is not different from you. This longing to wake up, this strange path that has brought you here. The call and the response is already here. We call out and immediately we are answered. But we are not answered in the way we think. We are not, we do not get what we think we want. So there is some great letting go that must happen, this realizing, oh, I've been waiting for something else. And this great question, what if this is it? What if nothing happens next? This is the moment of transmission. This is the moment of life. This is the great invitation which Josh will now comment on.
Nothing comes next. So Ananda asks, aside from the gold road, aside from the stick and bowl, did the world-honored one transmit anything else? Ananda, yes! So on the one hand, just this, only ever just this, the call of the universe, the response of the universe, the endless absolute interpenetrating whole of the universe universing. From the beginning, there's never been anything other than this. It's not a secret. What if Master Wu Men's verses says, because it's so very clear, it takes so long to realize. So, just the call and response, just this, nothing transmitted. And we have Dogen reminding us that we become heirs to ourselves when we correctly transmit the I treasury of true Dharma to ourselves. We affirm our joining of bloodline with the Buddhas. Dogen also says that if the student's understanding doesn't exceed the master's by half, Dharma transmission becomes nothing but a miserable stamp of a miserable stamp. Bad photocopy. That's Chinese for bad photocopy. Ancient Japanese. So, correctly transmitting to ourselves, nothing is transmitted, just this. I remember on the eve of my Denkai ceremony, I was wearing my black Roksu for the last round of interviews I would have, wearing my black Roksu before I got the gold Roksu. and I went in to see my teacher, I went in to see James, and I was like, I am just going to bow the hell out of this bow. I'm just going to bow this bow. Went in, and I bowed this bow. And I went to stand up, and I stood on the hem of my robe and knocked myself over backwards. And I thought, thank you, good point. And then I went in to see David. And I was like, okay. Now I'm going to bow the hell out of this bow. And I bowed the hell out of this bow. And I went to stand up and sit back down, and I missed the cushion. When those of us who have the teaching stick carry the stick in during Kinhin, when our hands are normally in Shashu, one hand over the other hand in a soft fist at about the level of the solar plexus, we with a stick are holding our stick and resting the crook of it, resting the tip of it in the crook of our arm, and then we come to Gassho as we return to our seat, and our stick is upright. As Kinhin ended before the Taisho, I hit myself in my face with my stick. Turns out I'm a buffoon. This just in. But there's another important thing. So Ananda, here he's asking this question. And one thing for us to know about Ananda is that everything that we know of the Buddha's teaching in Pali is because of Ananda's memory. He had an eidetic memory. And before any of the sutras were written down, they were recorded in Ananda. So let us appreciate that transmission. Aside from the robe and bowl, is there anything else? No. And there are the precepts. The 16 precepts are transmitted. They are transmitted in Jukhai. They are transmitted in ordination. They are transmitted in Denkai. They are transmitted in the second part of transmission called Denbo. This is not nothing. And this practice is not about purifying ourselves. This practice is not about acting in a way that we can assure ourselves that we alone are at least blameless. This is not our practice. The precepts orient our action, remind us of to investigate our values as we navigate the realm of form, the realm of the many, the realm of the relative, the realm of this and that. The realm of this and that is the place we honor the reality of know this and that. So we do not become blameless. We do not become pure. And part of our practice is endlessly turning brokenheartedly toward our own complicity in harm causing. deeply honoring the teachings of the precepts and also paying attention to the large and small ways in which we individually, we societally, we as a species cannot keep them. This is why we have such an elaborate ceremony around the act of eating. We are killing and stealing from the universe to support our life. And all of the liturgy, all of the invocation of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas is to remind us of the gravity of that act, and perhaps to be reminded of the gravity in this act, as David was reminding us of the gravity, the love of the universe for the universe. But we eat, we kill, we steal the bodies of beings and make them into our body. And we remind ourselves to do it in the service of all beings. We do it in the service of liberation from suffering. Not in the service of being sure we're right. In the service of turning brokenheartedly toward all that is heartbreaking, the reality of sickness, old age, death, loss, change, in small ways, in large ways, of individuals, of families, of communities, of species, of cultures, of ecosystems, of planets. The universe of life and deathing. One of my day jobs is I'm a Dharma book editor, and I've been working with a person named Larry Yang on a book forthcoming called Awakening Together, the Spiritual Practice of Diversity in Community. Larry has a little aspirational poem he includes in there. He says, "May I be as loving in this moment as possible. If I cannot be loving in this moment, may I be kind. If I cannot be kind, may I be non-judgmental. If I cannot be non-judgmental, may I not cause harm. And if I cannot not cause harm, may I cause the least amount of harm I can." And I might add, and if I cannot cause less harm, may I be open-heartedly, wholeheartedly awake to the pain, to the cries of the world. And to paraphrase Dogen, if not now, when? If not this, what? If not here, where? And if not me, who? So please sit comfortably and be invited to come forth into our shared practice of Dharma dialogue, and your respondents for this dialogue will be myself, David, and Kate.
Articulated beautifully the word calling, that there's so much that we are aware of that we are not aware of. there are gradients in our possible responses, and calling for me is perhaps the ultimate, what we are called to do no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Stands that we must take no matter what.
Yeah. And don't imagine that we are called to do that thing over there later. Right now, in each moment of Zazen, in each step of Kinhin, respond to this call. Thank you, Andy. Christine.
Thank you very much. My good fortune to hear this, because as I was listening, I had this image of myself of in life right now. I've been so rigidly adhering to a map, and at least thinking I have. And there's just a lot of natural disasters in my life right now that have obliterated that map to hell. And I thought, what a tragedy. And then also, I've tried so hard in my life, probably haven't seen all the ways that I've stepped on my head and fallen all over. And that's not working either, and I thought that was a tragedy. And I just wanted to laugh in the middle of it all, because I'm like, oh, okay, thank you.
Yeah, these we might say life is one natural disaster after another. And the great good fortune we have to be disrupted. You know, that we say in Zen to participate in loss. So not just, I mean, we can say, oh yeah, more, bigger, stronger, faster, wiser. But this, it is the other side, equally important. And actually, as long as our map is tracking fairly well, we're really stuck. Right? Because, yeah, it's good enough. I'm not going to give this up. And I think it is on the cushion, moment after moment, we can see in our life when it doesn't go. And apparently, at the end, it really doesn't go the way we think we would like it. Right? That's coming. So this is not the bad news. Right? But to see this. What a wonderful thing to be able to say thank you. Yes, thank you.
Yes, and not being too sure that we know what is a disaster at the time. I think about times when Josh has displayed his buffoonery for the Sangha, and this was what really drew me to
because the truth
he was
is
like
out.
Me because he was fallible, you know, and approachable that way. So we may feel as though we've just done it all wrong, but that's exactly right.
Person at the end of this row who I can't see.
David, I really appreciated your reminder that the sense of separation with you is not the problem. I forget that. I also love this notion that gravity is the force of, you know, love among things in the universe, and it's that sense of separation, I suppose, that you know, makes us see things, offer love, not the problem.
Yeah, I think that's so important, Jeff, and yeah, so easy to fall into this is the problem, but in this bigger sphere, then everything calls us, and we can appreciate the separation, appreciate it as part of the dance. And then when we see it this way, it doesn't hurt any less, or still can be quite challenging, but this invitation not to believe what we think. You know, what is it? In the heart of this separation is nothing but love, nothing but a universal life manifesting. Now is this, now is that. Thank you.
Tim?
Thank you for reminding me that the practice is the refuge. Sometimes you get it. And I get it. I can lose sight of that and look for the place or the retreat to be refuge from the heart. Much more interesting than the heartbreak is the refuge.
Thank you. Well said.
And I think part of our path is actually seeing that it actually is more interesting. You know, not that I have to try harder, and I used to think that I had to control my mind, and if I kept my mind in the right place, then I would, but you know, we just wear out, right? The mountain is crumbled to the plain. But we begin to catch these glimmers of it's actually, there's something more interesting than my internal dialogue of complaint. And it takes a while to see that. So we stay in the dialogue of complaint and we go back and visit that. But when we begin to touch this aliveness, then it's not a separation, I am going to get there, but there is something here that's really interesting. What is it? What is it? And then it doesn't matter where we are. Then it's not willpower.
And interesting is one way to name it. For me, I might name it that there's something that feels more honest and honorable. Mm-hmm. So to show up to the duly felt, duly perceived pain of being.
It's Jessica.
Cindy, and then Jessica.
When I'm in the middle of the weeds, I forget that the cold water and the sharp edges of the weeds and the no view from the muck is okay. Somehow I want to, you know, practice harder and make that go away. I love what David said about, you know, go ahead, you know, really throw your attitude. I'm just at ease at the moment because I've been in a number of days and I'm grateful. And it's so fast.
For me, this is where faith arises, when everything's dark and I can't see which way to go and I'm sure that I've got it wrong or I'm going down, you know, and this is, we were talking yesterday about fruits of practice, and I think that this is one of the fruits of practice, that we can just throw ourselves throw ourselves into it with the faith that there is refuge here somewhere, even if we don't see it yet. And that something does come to meet us. It may not be what we, what our idea of refuge was. It almost never is. but it turns out to be some better version than what we had imagined. So, yeah, hard to find those dark to be in those dark places. And you're absolutely right. Just being down in the mud and water is that.
Jessica?
Yes. Thank you. Thanks for the permission to be, just to be a buffoon or to be whatever it is that I am in each moment. This is such a beautiful opportunity also to notice how subtle the shift is from being with to getting through, mm-hmm. and how quickly kind of I'll move into that. Okay, I just have to get through this, get on to the next thing. And, mm-hmm. well, this delusion's okay mm-hmm. because it's helping me get through this. Okay, now I can get to the next thing. And so that's one of the things that trips me up is how the delusions can function sometimes to help me get to the next thing. But what is this next thing? You know, my mind just keeps going there. And of course, in the default world out of here, there are lots of tasks and things to do. But to remember, there is no next thing. There is nothing but this. Just this, so I don't need to get through it. I just need to be with it, and to recognize that I won't find like the way to stay with it. There's not like that one thing that I can do to keep me with it. It's lots of things, and it's nothing. It's just being with. So, thank you.
A friend of mine has a happiness app on his phone. Oh, yeah, really. More happiness. But it sort of tracks what you do, so you learn what makes you happy and stuff. And one of the questions on it, that it sort of beeps at different times and you're supposed to note things. But one of the things is, if you could fast forward through this moment, would you? And I it's a question that stayed with me, you know, when it's difficult, because there is a subtlety. We don't even know we're in endurance mode. And something for me in that question, so my vow is whatever comes, but yeah, I'd like to fast forward through this one. So just that reminder that there is a choice to be made, as Josh was saying, moment after moment on the cushion, and that choice is huge, and never over, never done. Now.
And picking up on that, and what Kate and Christine were saying too, all of the suffering in my life. These great, the places of greatest pain and suffering that I would not wish on my worst enemy. But actually, I can honestly say I wouldn't trade it away. And all of that has brought me here.
I'm struck with the approach of making choices, making the decision to come to this place, making decision to sit on a cushion spread. Making a decision, making choices as to how we use our minds, how we use our bodies in practice. And these are all, many people have spoken to these choices and the importance of even being with the choice. But I think, just speaking personally, there's an inexorable quality that permeates the entire experience for me, in which, you know, I'd like to think that I'm making choices, and I'd like to think, yes, this was, you know, this was a decision that I made to come, and I decided to sit on a chair and all this business. But it's not clear to me that that works for me. That works for me. Things happen, and it creates a change here, which leads to another change, You know, it's endless in that way. And I just want to suggest that this current that moves us from one place to the other is, I think it's really important in our lives and something really to be honored and treasured.
This is a really interesting point, and I find myself gripped by it now and again too, about this matter of choice. Because on the one hand, it seems pretty obvious that we can only ever do the thing that we've chosen to do, and there was no way we could do anything else, given our entire background and that, you know, beginningless karma and all of that. And yet somehow it requires our participation. Somehow there is a way that we step into it and agree to be part of it, you know, and to enact it. And I don't have the answer here. For me, it's a great mystery how all of that happens. I was thinking about when we were chanting the Dahishin, no, the Dharani.
Shosan, yeah.
Thank you, that one. We have no idea what we're saying. We don't know what effect is supposed to, like, ward off disaster. And that the only thing we can bring to it is intention. And how that is the most important thing. Strip away all the words and the meaning, we bring intention to it. And I think that is what we bring to our choices, to these apparently non-choice choices. Nevertheless, we participate with our intention. It is a great mystery, and I'm so glad you brought it up.
And there's mystery on both sides of it. So am I making the choice? There's mystery on the side of choice, no choice. But let's not miss out on really seeing how much we don't even know, who is this I?
Okay. Thank you to everybody for all your comments. I'm really struck by this idea of a map or a blueprint. I see myself always trying to move around whatever the map or blueprint is that I have, but I will never absolutely give it up. And it strikes me that, you know, when I first started coming to Zen, I was coming to meditate and get better, and things would be better. And then I could go back to living my life. And now I've been on this detour, sort of waiting for you guys to help me with a map. And I'm like, oh, it's not a detour. And I think what's sort of being presented to me is like, it's you're just sitting in this field. There is no map, there is no place to go. And I think I'm just like, but we're just sitting in a field? There's a highway and there's this thing I gotta get to, and you were supposed to help me with that, and now I'm stuck in a field.
You're welcome.
And I would say you've been stuck in the field all your life.
What's that book title? Cultivating the Empty Field?
Yeah.
Or
Yes. Thank you for your talks. I am especially grateful, actually, for this metaphor of the map. Just because a map is a physical thing, it's a solid thing, and it gives me a handle on what I'm doing. You know, I have a kind of fascination with maps, and sometimes I spend more time looking at the map than at the terrain. but this gives me a way to understand how disconcerting practice is for me, just because my experience doesn't correspond to what I'm expecting to see or to feel. I don't know, just because it's a map, I think maybe I have the feeling that I could just throw it away. I could burn it. Of course, that is not possible. But just the fact, it just explains the discrepancy between this thing I'm carrying with me in my back pocket and what happens when I let myself go into practice. And I also want to say how much I appreciate how coherent the Boundless Way teaching is, both what the teachers say and what the texts in our sutra books say, and how you guys just keep repeating over and over again. You already have it. It's right here. There's nothing coming next. I really need to hear that.
And of course, the Boundless Way teaching is just a map, right? This too is it.
And that there's nothing wrong with making a map and following it, but to recognize that it's always only provisional, right? Mm-hmm. And then another map, and then another, to be able to hold it that loosely. Mm-hmm.
Well, and that Buddhism itself is a map. And so really, to appreciate the function, this is not saying maps are bad. This is saying maps are maps. You can quote me on that. And provisional, right? And then we can begin to see, oh my God, there's something else. Or all of that. Yeah.